I call the meeting of Energy and Climate to order, and we will start by welcoming the Commissioner of Commerce, who is going to be starting us off on an overview of the Walz administration's budget. Welcome, Commissioner.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here to present the portion of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's budget that relates to the Commerce Department and the work of this committee. I am Steve Kelly, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And I will give you a brief overview of the requests that our department has. But only related to this committee's jurisdiction, we have other portions of the department's activities that fall in the jurisdiction of another committee. So, Madam Chair, members, at a high level, as you have heard, the governor and lieutenant governor are committed to investing in students across Minnesota, increasing access to affordable, comprehensive health coverage, and empowering communities with the tools they need to succeed. The specific budget requests that I'll mention today fit into a couple of those overall themes in the administration's budget proposal. I know there is some value to repetition as a way of reminding members of the work that the Commerce Department does, but I am going to just touch very briefly on the breadth of what we do. There's also in your packets a reminder about our leadership team, and you've already heard from Deputy Commissioner Joe Sullivan and Assistant Commissioner Catherine Blauvelt related to the work in the Energy Resources Division. So moving to slide 7, the State Energy Office funding. The governor is recommending $500,000 annually from the general fund to fund the State Energy Office in the Division of Energy Resources. This change item would fund current FTEs working on energy resilience, reliability, technical assistance, and program management. Some members may be aware that the State Energy Office was previously provided with funding from a grid reliability fee that is no longer being assessed. And so this funding would replace the funding provided by that previous source. The Division of Energy Resources State Energy Office serves Minnesota businesses and consumers in a variety of ways by ensuring the energy system supports a strong economy, job creation, and healthy environment, advancing Minnesota's leadership in energy efficiency, expanding our renewable energy potential and energy business activity, and assisting low-income Minnesotans through financial assistance and energy conservation measures. It oversees 19 programs within the division. Several of these have been enacted since 2000 without additional funding, including the Energy Conservation Information Center, the Minnesota Business First Stop, the Renewable Energy Development Program and Technical Assistance for Renewable Energy, Local Energy Efficiency Program and Energy Savings Partnership, and the Community Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy Loan Program. Also included is the Emergency Energy Conservation and Allocation Plan, or Energy Assurance, and the Guaranteed Energy Savings Plan. The Energy Office also works on the B3 Benchmarking and Sustainable Buildings 2030 program. So this funding would enable us to continue those activities that serve a variety of Minnesotans. If we go to the next slide, the governor is recommending $20 million from the Renewable Development Account in fiscal year 20 and 21. To fund grant applications by schools. The funds would be available for grants until the funds appropriated to the department from the IDA for those 2 years have been expended. up to $500,000 per year from those RDA funds, according to the governor's recommendation, would be appropriated to the Department of Commerce for two FTE and administrative costs of the program. We anticipate that those costs would be higher initially, and if this program were to be continued in future years, that after we develop the templates and other guidance, there would be lower administrative costs after the first 2 years. Schools experience high energy costs, and the Solar on Schools program could reduce electric utility bills. I understand that this committee has already heard a bill, and the governor recognizes that members have done considerable work on this and is happy to provide his own recommendation in support of education and expanding our solar energy infrastructure through this Solar on Schools program. The approach that the governor recommends is a master lease program that would use the RDA dollars to buy down the cost of projects on individual schools and improve the payback for the schools from investing in solar energy. The investments recommended could potentially result in installation of 17 to 26 megawatts of additional solar capacity in Minnesota. The Commerce Department would develop technical advisory committee with the solar industry investors and education leadership to develop the program in a cooperative and informed way in order to ensure its success. The third item we have is related to litigation costs. The governor is recommending the appropriation of $1,485,000 in fiscal year 20 for litigation costs. Now, they are litigation costs, but these are payments of attorney's fees awards resulting from two cases. Not all of this litigation expense is in the committee's jurisdiction. One case relates to the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act. The state of North Dakota sued Minnesota, alleging that the Next Generation Energy Act had interfered with interstate commerce to the detriment of the state of North Dakota. The North Dakota was successful in that litigation. Both the Public Utilities Commission and the department are responsible for paying those attorney's fees. We have a payment agreement to pay those costs by July of 2019, and we're seeking authorization from the legislature for that funding. The additional case related to the commerce enforcement side of the department's activities, and that's $960,000. Only half of the overall obligation to the state of North Dakota is being carried by the Commerce Department. The other half is related to the Public Utilities Commission. Madam Chair and members, those are the change items in the governor's budget proposal related to the Department of Commerce.
Representative Swazinski has a question.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Kelly, for coming in to the committee today. And I've just got a few questions. Kind of want to chat a little bit. You kind of mentioned a few things I wanted to talk about. So it's $1.1 million or one-one-thousandth of a billion dollars is what you're asking for the kind of cover your legal expenses with North Dakota. Do I understand that correctly?
Madam Chair and Representative Swedzinski, I am not going to parse your math on that. We're asking for $1,485,000.
Okay. All right. And then, I know the agency made kind of initial payment of, I think, $350,000. Kind of what account does that come out of? Do we know?
Madam Chair, Representative Swedzinski, could you provide me more context for that $350,000 number?
Madam Chair, I believe the Department of Commerce made an initial payment to North Dakota to kind of help reimburse some of that lawsuit to kind of make an initial payment. And I just was wondering kind of what account that comes out of, because if we already made a payment, you know, what else is left in there? You know, are we refilling a pot? Like, will you, because, I mean, there's chances, yeah. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and Representative Swedzinski, the Department of Commerce has been authorized funding in previous years, and we have used that funding to make the initial payment. If we are not provided the funding through appropriations this year, then we would be having to pay that out of the general fund appropriation to the department and would have to lay off personnel in order to cover those costs.
Madam Chair, so kind of you have to tighten your belt. All right. And then, so kind of just along the other line of things, so does your budget going to include any legal fees or litigation things for the Line 3?
Madam Chair and Representative Swedzinski.
Sorry.
Representative Swedzinski, I want to be clear, these two sets of cases are the attorney's fees awards made by the court. We are not asking in this request, the governor has not recommended recovery of any time by our staff or the attorney general's staff related to these cases. So I want to, that's an important distinction. At this point, so far, we have used department staff and attorney general staff resources to pursue our petitions for reconsideration to the Public Utilities Commission, and previous, before the dismissal of cases by the Court of Appeals, we had used the same resources, and we view that as part of the department's general operating responsibilities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, you have a kind of a rough estimate of kind of what was spent internally between the AG's office and the Department of Commerce on this, as far as kind of internal costs and time and staff hours, and, you know, if you were to kind of create a budgetary item, I'm sure you guys track that, because obviously we have only a certain amount of dollars before we have to, you know, lay off staff if we, you know, put spending out. So,
Madam Chair and Representative Swedzinski, I have not asked for that accounting with respect to, and one of the questions would be, what do you separate out? Because we had and have statutory responsibility to represent the public interest before the Public Utilities Commission in the Line 3 proceeding that the Public Utilities Commission was conducting. So the question is, would the accounting relate only to any petition for reconsideration and appeal from the Public Utilities Commission, or would you be seeking an accounting of all of the time by the AG's office and the department in representing the public interest before the Public Utilities Commission during the up to and including the final order by the commission?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just another question kind of along that same line, just kind of, you know, as we're kind of, as a committee and as a legislature, we're kind of trying to build a roadmap kind of into the future, and kind of just seeing kind of what may be coming before us is always a good thing. And just was kind of, you know, let's just say you're unfruitful with your work in front of the PUC. Have you spoken to the governor? Have you spoken to the lieutenant governor? And I mean, have you had conversations? Are you planning on continuing the lawsuit if you lose that appeal at the PUC, or kind of what's the plan?
Madam Chair and Representative Swedzinski, we, when the governor recommended that we pursue the reconsideration, I would say that given the fact that, I will state it as an assumption that I have made so far, okay, based on the governor's recommendation, that since we have observed that the PUC had denied our previous request for reconsideration, I am assuming that the PUC is going to do that again, and that we would then proceed with filing an appeal.
Madam Chair, and so from an internal standpoint, do you have a rough idea what that, if you could get back to me what you plan, kind of that, so we talked about what we spent, kind of, in, that would be an interesting number just to see kind of internally as you're asking for budgetary recommendations and support from the legislature for your funding. I'd like to know, as a legislator who'd be potentially voting on that, kind of what your plan is and what your budget would be to continue that and what your estimates of costs would be laying out into the future to continue that at a future date would be great. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Kelly, curious about the State Energy Office item. You mentioned that there are existing funds, or rather there were funds that are no longer available for that office. It's my understanding this is to keep the State Energy Office flat in terms of FTEs. Is that right?
Madam Chair and Representative Long, I want to be careful. There are perhaps two aspects to my answer to that question. One is that we have some, across the department, a variety of open positions, some of which may be in the State Energy Office, arising from the fact that in the previous biennium, we did not receive an increase in our operating budget. We were the only department in state government that did not receive an operating increase in the previous biennium. And so we may have some open positions. This funding that we're requesting from this committee, the $500,000, would sustain current authorized FTEs, and we're hopeful of getting an operating adjustment increase through another committee so that we can fill some open positions that could include open positions in the State Energy Office.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, what are you seeing in terms of trends for the demand on the workload of the State Energy Office?
Madam Chair and Representative Long, I will admit that over 2 months being in the job, I haven't determined a trend yet with respect to the work of the State Energy Office. I was in Faribault on Friday, visiting with the Three Rivers Community Action Program, and they identified a variety of needs that they continue to see in their community related to low-income heating assistance and low-income weatherization, including work related to emergency resources for heating, for furnace failures, furnace repair and replacement. My perception from at least that one visit is that there's a significant need, especially among low-income Minnesotans, and that the work of the State Energy Office is essential to meeting those needs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Baker.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, thank you for the report and the update. Earlier this week, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency was testifying as well on their projects. I had asked a question they didn't have an answer to, and I'll take a stab at it with you as well to see if this is something you know about. A couple years ago, the Clean Power Plan put out by the White House for several years had been moving along, stopped. Minnesota was investing quite a bit heavily on moving in that direction of the Clean Power Plan, 111D, if I'm talking about that. My question to the old administration, and so this is more of just where is the Walz administration at, if you know this, are they still spending money on that resource? Are we spending state dollars to still look at a clean power plan here in Minnesota after the judge had sort of stopped that motion here, I think, maybe about a year and a half ago? Do you know anything about that? Is that under your purview, Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, In the time that I have been at the department, I have not learned of any activities related to, at the department, related to the Clean Power Plan, which is not to say that there haven't been, but I am not aware of any.
Okay. Maybe there's a phone a friend. I'm not sure if Mr. Sullivan's here for that reason or not. So if you have an answer, I'd appreciate knowing.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, to my knowledge, Commissioner, thank you, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Commerce, Division of Energy Resources, to my knowledge, Commissioner Kelly is correct, but Minnesota was largely going to meet any emission requirements under 111D through the existing resources that we have coming on our system, both through the build-out of renewable resources and our efficiency. So we were largely on that track.
Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And please accept my apologies for being late today. I was just getting briefed on the budget forecast and the unfortunately the bad news that came out today. Commissioner, good to see you. My understanding is previously someone asked you about one of your budget change items. The change item title of litigation expenses, and a couple of questions about that. For those that don't know, what happened was is the state of Minnesota entered into litigation with the state of North Dakota regarding some of our energy laws. During that time, the state of North Dakota won the case on summary judgment. A judge looked at the merits of the case and said the state of Minnesota had no standing whatsoever. And North Dakota won on summary judgment, and it was a President Obama appointee who made that ruling. At that time, the legislature told the Department of Commerce, okay, that's enough. Resources are precious. Let's not do this. Yet the Department of Commerce continued, not you, Commissioner, but the previous leadership of the Department of Commerce continued to stretch out that litigation incurring costs. So I see the request for additional funds here. But I think as a legislature, we have a delicate balance here. On one hand, we want to make sure that you're not punished for the decisions of a previous administration. But likewise, we don't want to be incentivizing the department to engage in additional litigation, which brings me to the current side of things, which is, again, the line three side, which I believe Representative Swazinski might have chimed in on. How do we balance that? How do we balance it by making sure that you have the resources you need, but we are also communicating to the department that we do not want frivolous litigation?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, first, I want to be clear that the fundamental decision that led to the North Dakota action was the decision by the legislature to adopt the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act. It was not an action of the department that was being challenged. It was a decision by the legislature to adopt a policy, and that policy was challenged by North Dakota. And the department and the Public Utilities Commission incurred expenses, and that led to this award of attorney's fees defending the state's policy. I don't feel very apologetic about the previous administration's efforts to defend the policies adopted by the legislature. Secondly, in terms of going forward, as I mentioned previously, these are awards of attorney's fees. Staff time and attorney general staff time involved in any reconsideration or appeal related to line three are part of the operating responsibilities of the department.
And Madam Chair and to the Commissioner, certainly I want Minnesota's Attorney General Office defending Minnesota's law. I voted for the 2007 bill, but for those that don't know, summary judgment is when the judge says the facts of the case are so out of bounds that you don't even need to hear a trial on the matter. There's no dispute. And the legislature clearly told the department, do not continue this lawsuit. We're not going to fund it. Don't appeal it. And the department continued the lawsuit, continued fighting it, continued appealing it, to now to the point that we're actually paying not only for our lawyers, but I think we're paying for North Dakota's lawyers. And so, again, I, I don't want to tie into the Line 3 dispute too much, but is the Department of Commerce's current, are there legal costs incurred by the Department of Commerce right now with regards to the continuing Line 3 litigation?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, no one has, as far as I know, entered an award of attorney's fees against the department related to Line 3. We continue to work with the Attorney General's office, as we're required to do, related to the petition for reconsideration and any potential appeal of a decision by the Public Utilities Commission.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I'd like to continue the conversation with you, but I'm being summoned to another room, so I will continue that privately, though. But again, I was not wondering if Line 3 had involved us having to pay attorney's fees. I was wondering if the Department of Commerce is currently spending funds on litigation for Line 3. But we can follow up with that privately. So thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Straczynski. I don't see other questions or concerns. Thank you for coming, and thank you for your presentation.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for your consideration.
Representative Long. Representative Long, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move my bill today. I think it's being moved for possible inclusion in an omnibus.
Representative Long moves that House File 1683 be laid over for possible inclusion. Tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1683 is dealing with public access to data. With the increased usage of smart meters in our energy system, our energy data is getting better and better. Nearly half of all U.S. households now are outfitted with smart meters, and that number is growing every day. This data is a public benefit. It's a resource for customers and a resource that can help energy stakeholders better understand our energy system. It can help us cut carbon pollution, and it can also help us keep customer energy bills low. Currently, under state law, there is no requirement that utilities release energy use data to customers or to third parties. Many utilities do provide access to their customers, but it is at their own discretion. The Public Utilities Commission has had a couple of dockets on this. They have a model data release consent form for individuals. They also require that aggregated data adequately protect anonymity, but they have not gone beyond that in terms of requiring access to consumers. This bill would provide access to energy usage data in three ways. First, customers will have access to consistent and reliable personal data, regardless of where they live. This is their own data, and they have a right to it. It will allow customers to make better choices about their home energy usage, to decide where to invest in energy efficiency, and to reduce their energy utility bills. Second, the bill reinforces the customer's right to give permission to third parties to access their data. This can be, for example, to ask for services that help them save money, such as installing insulation or customizing a solar rooftop array. This provision can be a job creator, giving energy services businesses new ways to help their customers and be innovative in helping reduce energy costs. Third, the bill allows secure, anonymous, and disaggregated utility data to be made available to third parties for the purposes of research and development. We all want to respect customer privacy, and the bill has protections in place to ensure that. But this research, for example, could be used by a university to study energy trends. It could be used by a city to help meet their sustainability goals. And this data, I think, is a public benefit that could go to a number of important uses. One of my co-authors, Representative Garofalo, had to step out, But I wanted to thank him for sponsoring the bill, as well as a number of other members of the committee. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll invite up my testifiers, unless folks have questions for me before then.
Thank you, Representative Long. I think we can move to testifiers. I have a list here. Joseph Pereira, sorry. Welcome. Please correct me when you get to the table. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Are we good there? Okay, thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joseph Pereira. I'm Regulatory Director at the Citizens Utility Board of Minnesota. CUB is an independent consumer advocate representing residential customers and small business at the legislature, the Public Utilities Commission, and other policymaking arenas. I'm here today to testify in favor of House File 1683. In addition to the work CUB does with policymakers across the state, CUB regularly meets with local communities and civic organizations to provide relevant and digestible information to help them understand their energy systems and the energy transition that Minnesota is undergoing. Most importantly, CUB's outreach teams sit down with Minnesota families week in and week out to review their energy bills, assist them in understanding their energy use, and help them find ways to take control of how they pay for energy. Today, customers are faced with a quickly evolving energy system. Already, existing disconnects between customers and their energy use have potential to grow as customers transition to time-varying rates, to more generation and storage options, as they think about buying electric vehicles and continue to grow their concerns for cleaner generation systems. During this transition, it's important that the public has access to information which helps better inform personal and system decisions to save customers money and improve the efficiency of how we use energy. CUB is here today to support this bill in order to help transition this information to customers for their benefit. This energy transition is happening in all corners of our state, from customers in the biggest investor-owned utility to the smallest co-op and municipal utility. Customers are seeing their energy systems change. CUB believes that all customers should be able to access information to make informed decisions about energy expenditures. It's important public policy that both urban and rural customers are informed consumers and have control over these expenditures. In concerning ways, the rural parts of our state are experiencing a growing energy gap as our transition speeds. These customers have less access to funds to support energy efficiency upgrades. They're less familiar with self-generation options. They have little to no access to electric vehicle charging infrastructure. They lack access to providers that can deliver energy services, and they experience the highest energy costs in the state. CUB believes HF 1683 creates a standard that all customers should be engaged and informed as we transition. If we do not include these customers in these activities, we create an undue inequity and exacerbate growing gaps between customers. In the coming years, ratepayers across the state will invest hundreds of millions of dollars in hardware and software which collect data on their energy habits. This equipment and related information will be used by utilities to optimize their systems, inform resource decisions, and in some cases, earn a rate of return for shareholders. CUB asks, if done securely, why can't that same information be made available to the public to do the same? Access to personal energy data is the first step in empowering customers to make informed energy decisions. Does it make sense to weatherize my home? Should I purchase an electric vehicle? Does solar make sense for me? These are questions that customers should be able to answer no matter where they live in the state and who their energy provider is. Access to data provides the answers. HF 1683 creates a statewide expectation that utilities provide customers their own data in convenient and usable forms. This access empowers customers with information useful in making consumer decisions that save them money and improve their environment. These provisions create a sound groundwork for customers to make proactive energy decisions as we transition. Second, the bill gives these customers the ability to give written permission to third parties to have access to their information in order to assist in these consumer decisions. This allows for more seamless implementation of energy services to customers. Because of the complicated nature of much of this data, customers are going to need partners to help them with decision making. These bill provisions streamline the process for customers and will save them money. The potential for market growth for small business here is strong. This provision moves funds from the payment of utility bills out into the economy and supports local jobs. Next, the bill allows third parties the ability to request the utility provide aggregated and/or anonymized data sets of meaningful summary energy usage data. Likely, this provision provides the most concern for parties related to this bill and our partners at the utility. CUB understands these concerns, but also offers that the value of this data to the public good is significant and the risk to customers is non-existent. This data is useful for agencies like CUB to provide advocacy on behalf of customers to reduce costs across rate classes. Our sister agency, CUB Illinois, has conducted an analysis from real-time usage data, as would fall under the provisions of this bill, for more than 300,000 anonymous customers. Through this analysis, they determined that 97% of customers in the studied rate class would benefit from a different pricing structure. They took action and through this analysis saved customers nearly $30 million. This is just one example, but it demonstrates that access to these large, secure, and protected data sets has huge public interest benefits. Beyond customer interest, this data represents large potential for research and development of new services and products, as well as opportunities for economic development. Customer dollars paid for the investment into the system which collects this big data. It's good public policy to use this anonymous data to allow entities to generate public benefit from it. Consumer protection is core to CUB's mission. As such, we feel that the provisions built within this bill to maintain privacy of customer data, protect their anonymity, and disguise their usage information offers ample protection to maintain customer interest and to protect the public good. When disseminated correctly, the information delivered under this provision provides no opportunity for consumer harm. We are interested in protecting customer data, customer privacy, and customer integrity. This bill strengthens this interest and provides a pathway for using protected data for public good. Lastly, this bill asks the utilities to adopt, if they are not already doing so, industry standards for protecting the security of the energy data it maintains. CUB supports the requirement that utilities are doing risk analysis and having plans in the event that customer data should be breached. The utility industry is at the forefront of cybersecurity. This provision continues this tradition and protects customers in a proactive way. Further, it is imperative that data collected from customers remains within the sphere of energy services. The use of this data for non-energy related marketing, customer profiling, or other related applications is inappropriate and should not be allowed. This bill protects customers from these activities and keeps this data within the appropriate arena. CUB believes that HF 1683 holds huge potential benefits for customers to take control of their energy use and reduce costs. The bill recognizes that the public has a connection to this data through its contributions to build the infrastructure that collects it. It recognizes that customers benefit from data access and empowers their activities. The bill offers common sense solutions to data access without exposing customers or the utilities to undue risk, and we ask for the members' support. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee and sponsors of the bill, Representative Long, Representative Garofalo, Representative Hornstein, Representative Lippert, and Representative Mahoney for offering a pathway for public good. We look forward to working with members of this body and other interested in parties in supporting this bill, fine-tuning its approach, and creating policy which benefits customers throughout the state. Thank you.
Testifier. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll invite up Benjamin Stafford.
Morning, Madam Chair, committee representatives. Thank you. My name is Benjamin Stafford. I am the Director of Policy and Public Affairs for Clean Energy County, Minnesota. It's been a whole week since I've been up here, so thanks for welcoming me back. As a reminder, Clean Energy Economy Minnesota is an industry-led nonprofit organization dedicated to strengthening Minnesota's clean energy ecosystem. We are sort of the business voice of clean energy in the state, and we're here to represent and support House File 1683. And I want to talk to you a little bit about a professional passion of mine, which is consumer data access. And you may say that is a very niche professional passion, to which I say, good point. But consumer data access is a discussion that's been happening in the industry for about a decade now. So I want to talk a little about what customer data access has been, where customer data is now, why this bill sort of helps us understand what we can do in this state and why there's strong practices in privacy embedded in this bill. So I'm going to provide some support there. So in terms of context, I think we need to take a step back a little bit and look at a high level at what energy data access has been historically for most of us who, as energy consumers in the state, here and elsewhere. And that is pretty much your bill. So there are a number of factors those of us that are industry insiders know are factoring into your bill and driving your costs and understanding your consumption, how you can change your behavior and be a better customer for your own purposes or for others. And those are largely fogged by the way we engage consumers with data today. So this is kind of like the equivalent of going to the grocery store and having paying the same unit cost, whether it's chewing gum or caviar, and getting a bill 30 days later. Not exactly the most engaging enterprise. We're in a position now where we have much more fine-grained data. And customers, I think, to Joe's point, they're paying for the data systems that are generating this. This is a tremendous opportunity, and we're at a point where I think we can move towards moving folks from being, in the past, what they may have been referred to as load, then maybe demand to be managed, to now consumers that are informed. That's an important jump, and I think a tremendous opportunity for consumers and for the business community in total. So in that move, you know, we need to acknowledge too that the utilities in the room have been leaders in this discussion. Our colleagues at Xcel have been involved in the Green Button Data Connect process since 2013. You know, we do want to acknowledge that there's been strong work at the commission, et cetera, but it's been kind of an uneven process. And I think it's time for us to have a strong policy that pushes the state in a clear direction. So in thinking about the principles of this bill, you know, we have the data. Customers are paying for the back office systems for this. The data, it could be very helpful for a number of applications, whether I want, as a customer, whether I'm a business, whether I'm a residential customer, want to make decisions about how am I using my energy? Is it serving my purposes? Do I want to pursue clean energy options for my premises, et cetera? That data is available, and it's not getting to consumers in a digestible format. When we create data standards and open standards, and Representative Long talked about this, over half the residential meters in the country have access to this data today through industry-led programs such as Green Button Connect. We're unleashing a lot of economic value in this space. We're unleashing a lot of innovation in this space. We're allowing third parties to come in and be trusted energy advisors for a lot of folks that are not being, you know, pursued with energy options to date. So it's kind of like the equivalent of creating a space where you can create an app for that. That's kind of an analogy for this. So when we have that kind of opportunity, you will attract a lot of third-party investment. You will attract a lot of energy service providers, and you will have much more sophisticated, educated, and empowered energy consumers, no matter what sector, in industrial, commercial, residential, doesn't matter. You're going to have more informed consumers, and I think that's better for everyone. And it's time. We have the data. It's time. I do want to also note that other states that have had practices on this, you know, some of this comes through a regulatory process. Some of it needs a clear policy discussion at legislatures. In California, for example, one of the first movers on customer data access, the PUC had clear authority to push for standardized data operations. And when these investments were made by utilities, they said, if as part of your investments, if you're investing in this back office system, you're going to get customers' data quickly. This is a priority for us. It matters if we're going to invest in these systems to generate the data. Surely we should give the customers the benefits of that. And so we've seen some states take the lead on that. Where states don't have quite as clear data practices or a clear mandate that this data should be widely available, we see it sort of fledgling. We see some uneven utility operations. We don't see a lot of clarity. And to be fair, they just don't have clarity. Those utilities don't have clarity on what they should do with data. I think this bill sets that course, says that we should have standardized open standards data, and that this is a strong practice. Lastly, just to note quickly on privacy, we agree with our previous testifiers that privacy is a very important part of this. We think that this bill has strong privacy protections for consumers. That's something we firmly agree with. No one wants this to not work for consumer privacy. That includes sort of the folks that would come in as third-party advisors. That includes utilities. That includes consumers themselves. No one wants privacy to fail. I think there are strong provisions in this bill that cover that. So in total, we think this is a strong bill. It moves in a clear direction. It provides a space where we can create a lot of value, and it values customers, moving from load to maybe demand-side management to informed consumers, and we just agree that that's a strong step for the state. I'd be happy to answer any questions as well.
Yes, I'd like to call up Adam Seidel.
Madam Chair, do I have permission to put the testifier under oath?
O'Grady is back. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Adam Seidel, Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum. MINCEF promotes and educates on opportunities to modernize our Minnesota energy economy under strong American principles like free and competitive markets, American innovation, national security, and property rights. MINCEF believes that House File 1683 is a good opportunity to discuss these important principles. And I'd also like to thank Representative Long as well as Representative Garofalo for his co-authorship of the bill. And I'm truly excited to see conservative principles on display in bipartisan legislation. One consistent American principle is the innovation created by the cooperation of free people in a free market. From the telecommunications, where we now have supercomputers in our pockets, to agriculture, where our American farmers feed the world, Americans joining together to form new ventures and new ideas has led to greater prosperity for our state and for our nation. The third-party sharing provisions in House File 1683 are consistent with these principles. Giving individual customers of all sizes the power to share their data or not share their data if they don't want it shared with who they see fit has the potential to unlock tremendous creative potential in our economy. Under the top-down government-regulated monopoly utility model, customers have currently been largely at the mercy of their incumbent utility providers. We know that these utilities are collecting a lot of data on customers, and customers are paying for that, and it's being used to design utility models. But under the current practice, customers don't have the right to know really how their personal data is being used, specifically, and how it's being used to craft price models. All of that is kind of over in the mysterious black box of the PUC, to the extent that it is publicly accessible. It's very difficult for the average consumer to understand. House File 1683 creates a customer service for ratepayers where, at the very least, they have the right to know what data about them is being collected and understand how it's being used to calculate their electric bill. From a price transparency perspective, I'm reminded of Representative Baker's successful effort to get the gas tax information on the gas pump that informs consumers about how much they're paying in taxes at the gas pump. I appreciate this opportunity to speak today, and we'll stick around for questions.
Thank you. I'd like to call up Jamie Fitzke. And to Representative Garofalo, this is my second to last testifier.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Jamie Fitzke. I'm with the Center for Energy and Environment. We're a nonprofit who provides energy efficiency analysis and recommendations to individuals, organizations, and communities across the state of Minnesota. We take pride in being a data-driven and looking for cost-effective solutions to reduce carbon and energy waste. House File 1683 is the start of a terrific and much-needed conversation. Allowing customers to access their energy information empowers and engages customers in their energy usage. Allowing public access to summarized and anonymized energy data could lead to enhanced utility program offerings and provide insight to improve rate structures. We understand a fee is needed to cover costs incurred for public access to summarized data. We would request considerations for low or no cost access to this information for nonprofit and academic institutions like universities, where the information could be used to serve the public interest. As many will state, and we absolutely agree, enforcement and maintenance of customer privacy and risk management ensuring data is protected is of equally great importance. We acknowledge there are additional issues to be worked out, as the committee most likely will hear from other testifiers. We look forward to productively working with the author and others to resolve those issues and pass this bill. Thank you for listening to my testimony.
My last testifier will be John Farrell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm John Farrell. I work with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We are a national nonprofit research and advocacy organization supporting policies that enable individual and community energy solutions. And I'm here to speak in favor of House File 1683. In the big picture, this is an era, as mentioned by other testifiers, when technology is giving customers more choices than ever about how they receive or generate or manage their energy use. This includes things like rooftop solar, energy storage, smart thermostats, or smart appliances. And customers need access to their energy use data in order to take advantage of the choices that they have, the data that the utilities are collecting on their behalf. There are three key reasons why ILSR supports this legislation. The first is that the utility's collection of this data is already paid for by the customer, and the customer should have access to things that they are helping contribute to the collection of. The second one is important because the customer has no choice in service, because utilities in Minnesota have publicly granted monopolies. So they can't go choose a different utility company that will offer them the energy use data that they might like to have as a customer. And so it's important that we have rules that enable customers to have access to that data, since they don't have a choice in their utility company. And the third one is that I'm sure that there are many companies and third parties that are eager to jump on this opportunity to help customers use their data to save money and lower energy use, a principle that has a broad public benefit as well as a benefit to those individual customers. So in other words, the customer should be able to exercise what choices are available to them in terms of their energy choices with the best possible information that's available. There are several potential benefits, and several have been mentioned by previous testifiers that we agree with as well. We know they can help, for example, right-size a solar array for a customer to know what their energy use is, or to make sure that the home authorization bid that they've received includes items that will be of maximum cost effectiveness. We also know that as utilities are rolling out time-of-use pricing, it will help customers find services to reduce their energy bills, particularly at times when prices may be higher. This kind of policy can also support local policies, such as the city of Minneapolis just adopted, requiring homeowners and landlords to disclose energy use of properties at the time of sale or time of rental. If this information is available and collected by utilities, it can be used by customers more easily to meet those disclosure requirements. The final thing it could do, I just want to offer a personal anecdote as someone who is a self-professed energy nerd, like some others who have been up here, that I often look at my energy use data through my utility bill and find that it is lacking in the kind of context that might be useful. For example, if I look at my gas bill and want to know, have recent improvements I made to my home improve my energy efficiency, I know how much I'm paying, and I can see how much I'm using, but it's very difficult to see that in the context of how cold it was, for example, at that time of year. Sometimes that kind of information is provided, and that context is provided, but I find that I have to spend some of my own time doing my own analysis. And I would imagine that there would be companies out there that would be interested in helping me better understand the cost effectiveness of improvements that I've made and also additional things that could be done, and be able to do some of that kind of advanced analysis around heating degree days or cooling degree days that might give me a sense of whether or not my energy use is high or low, or not because my kids are playing with a thermostat, but because of the investments that I've made in my home property. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That completes my testifier.
Discussion on the bill? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at, I just took some notes, and some questions really come to mind in this release of information. Is that an opt-in or opt-out, or is it just who's ever in the... Whoever buys energy from a utility gets into that if somebody requests it?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, so there's three different types of release of information. Should I speak to all three?
Sure.
Okay. So for individuals who are consumers and they get to request their own data, so that would be a release to them. Then there is a provision for providing access to third parties, so they would get to designate, say, an app provider who wants to help them manage their own energy. Say, you can have access to my data, so that would be a release from that individual to that third party. And then the third is public access to summary, aggregated, anonymized data, and so that would be a request from that individual or from that entity to the utility for describing what that data would be. The utility would set the fee for what that would cost to provide, and then they would exchange the data.
So, Madam Chair, so do they have to opt in to any of those releases, or does the utility, can they sell this data?
Madam Chair, so I don't know if they can sell it now. I'm not aware of any provision that would allow them to sell it now. In this context, they would be able to charge a fee for a request for specific anonymized data.
Madam Chair, they would be able to charge a fee for that.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, a reasonable fee could be set by the utility for the costs incurred in compiling the data.
Reasonable fee. And Madam Chair, one final question, two actually. So having listened to some of this, they're saying that I can get help with my energy bill through this data. Just so you know, I'm a reasonably intelligent man and I look at my energy bill and my eyes roll back. So I'm not a nerd, and most people aren't, so they're not going to look at all that data. But my question is, so if I call, in the Xcel ratepayer energy area, if I call them for an audit or anything else, is this where they would be looking at this particular data on my particular home?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, so different utilities now provide different services, right? And so Xcel does have pretty robust services that they provide to individuals. They partner with different apps right now that can allow you to kind of look at time of use and things like that. Not every utility does that. This wouldn't require utilities to do that. It would only require utilities to provide access to you as a consumer about what data they're collecting from you. So if you have a smart meter, then you are collecting time of use data in real time, and so that would be provided to you. And then you could look at it yourself, or if it's too complicated,
just roll my eyes.
Yeah, you could go to a third party and say, hey, can you help me analyze this data and tell me whether, you know, I'm using a lot at a certain time of day or using a lot at a certain time of year, whether I might benefit from certain insulation installments, things like that. So it would also help empower the customer to work with third parties to provide access to services.
And then just the last question, this seems to have a lot of data. Well, you know what? I'm just going to skip that one. Thank you.
Representative Spasinski, you're next.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask a question of one of the previous folks, but I guess I was just looking at the clock, and I guess we are kind of running tight potentially, and maybe rather than asking questions now, I was just going to wait till we could hear from all the testifiers out there so that they can have their say, and then we'll get into questions and that. So.
Representative, we have six folks signed up for testimony, perfect. So we'll take Representative Christensen's question, and then you have some amendments.
Yeah, I can offer those after the public testimony, ma'am, Madam Chair. Yeah.
If you'd like to do that, that's fine. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Long. So I'm not sure if I heard the answer to the opt-in or opt-out. What's the procedure for, they get their bill and there's a checkbox? Or, you know, I came late, so I apologize if I missed some of that.
Madam Chair, Representative Christensen, so if you are for personal data, for your own data, you would be able to request it. So they wouldn't be required to just send it to everybody, but you would be able to request the data. So I suppose that's an opt-in, right, to being able to receive the data. And then it's an opt-in for the other two provisions as well. If you are going to be providing data to a third party, then you would opt in to send them that data. You could also opt out at any time from sending a third party your data.
Okay, Madam Chair. So it's a request. They're all basically, you request the information if you want the information.
Madam Chair, Representative Christensen, that's correct. And this is designed to get at the fact that right now there's no provision requiring utilities to give this data to you if you request it. So some utilities do, some don't. It's inconsistent across the state, and so this would allow everybody to have the basic right to their own data.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski does not want to move your amendments at this time.
Well, I would. I'd like to hear from the public comment first, I guess, and then we can let the people speak first, and then we can do our thing.
Eric Swenson, Center Point Energy, has signed up. We have two. And on deck, Joyce Pepin. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair, members. Eric Swanson from Winthrop and Weinstein, and I'm testifying on behalf of CenterPoint Energy. I'll try to be very brief because I know there's a list of others that will raise other issues as well. I wanted to set the context a little bit from CenterPoint's perspective, and I think some of the other utilities. This is certainly a very important and valid issue to be discussing, and in fact, it's been discussed for many years now at the Public Utilities Commission in a very thorough work group process. The Commission convened a work group back in 2013. It's had over 30 groups and companies, as well as numerous individuals participating in that process, and it's been presided over by an ALJ who's already issued two work group reports to the Commission. All of that effort has been, it's recognized the careful balancing that we have to do in this area. Certainly there are laudable goals that the previous testifiers have talked about. At the same time, there are valid customer privacy concerns. There are cost concerns. There are practicality concerns. And we do have a number of concerns with the current language that we'll look forward to discussing more. One is that the current draft appears to treat all utilities alike and all customers alike, and that's just not reality for us. Another concern is that a lot of this good work that's happened before the Commission has led to some changes. And for example, we have Commission-approved consent forms now that we have to have signed before we share our customers' data with third parties. We filed our consent. The Commission has a model consent form that any utility can use, but we also have the ability to propose our own consent form if we needed something a little bit different given our unique circumstances, and we did that, and that form's been approved. So a lot is happening already, and we don't want change to require some back steps. So that's one concern. Another concern, and then I'll be quiet and turn it over to others, is I was struck as a regulatory attorney representing CenterPoint before the Commission with the enforcement provision that for whatever reason, and it's not clear to me why, and we'll want to talk about it more, gives enforcement of this to the Department of Commerce rather than the Public Utilities Commission. I'm not aware of any other provision in Chapter 216B that does that. It's a completely different process. So that's another item we're going to want to discuss, and that's just two, I'm afraid, of the items that we'll want to discuss with the author and others if this moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Joyce Pepin and then Jody Londo.
Madam Chair, just a question as the testifiers come up. What is the next step for this bill? Where is the next stop?
This will be laid over.
Does it need to go to civil law, judiciary for anything with privacy data information? Just thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Energy Committee. It is an absolute honor to be back here today. I'm very excited to be here. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Joyce Pepin, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Rural Electric Association, which represents the interest of the state's 44 electric distribution cooperatives, as well as the 6 generation and transmission cooperatives throughout the state. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 1683. We have several concerns with this bill, but I'll try to focus on just a couple of those concerns. during my couple-minute testimony. The first main concern is consumer privacy. Section 2, Subdivision 4 requires utilities to prepare and make available aggregate summary energy usage data upon the written request of any person within 10 days of a request. The potential security risks of that requirement are staggering. There's no clear direction on how a utility would aggregate the data, and regardless, such disclosure clearly comes with the risk that aggregated data could potentially be unwound by sophisticated hackers to determine whether residential property is regularly occupied and what schedules residents maintain. Such information could be used with other public information in unpredictable ways with substantial potential for customer concern. Utilities should not be forced into this position because they have deployed innovative metering solutions that collect data for the purposes of allowing for more efficient use of the electric grid and enhanced customer experiences. In addition to safety and security risks, customers may not want their energy use shared publicly with no opportunity to opt out. There is simply no way to guarantee that a hacker could not unaggregate customer data. The second major concern is the new data security and privacy unfunded mandates placed on utilities under Section 2, Subdivision 6. It says that utilities must implement risk management practices that include mitigating cybersecurity risks. They must protect against loss and unauthorized use, access, or dissemination of customer data. They must implement employee training measures to preserve data integrity and must maintain a comprehensive data breach response program. Utilities are already working to address these issues, and we are concerned that additional measures and mandates will be counterproductive in our efforts. The requirements in this subdivision seem to be an effort to legislatively gloss over the extremely complex cybersecurity challenges this bill inevitably invokes. How will utilities be able to ensure customer data integrity in light of the fact that they will also be required to provide customer data to any person who asks? How will utilities ensure that third parties who store customer data implement risk management practices that meet the same requirements? How will small electric cooperatives be able to provide this information without adding significant cybersecurity staff to ensure such data protections? Will utilities be indemnified for third-party breaches under the bill? It doesn't seem to do so. For the above reasons and a few others as well, MREA asks you to consider holding off on this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Jody Londo and then Thor Underdahl. I would remind everybody coming up that we only have about 10 minutes left and we are going to discuss this bill and there are two amendments that people may want to hear.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Jody Londo with XL Energy. I participated in the Public Utilities Commission data privacy proceeding and work group from 2012 to 2017. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. The Public Utility Commission's proceeding dealt with three tracks: identity theft, fraud protections, personally identifiable information, including notice to customers regarding how their data would be collected, used, and disclosed by the utilities, and customer energy usage data, again, collection, use, and access. I'd like to start by saying we believe there's an appropriate balance between privacy, security, and access to information to support public policy and the public interest. And you've heard a lot today about the good public policy reasons that data should be made available in some circumstances. However, we believe this bill would expose information about our customers that our customers believe is private. It would expose information that could pose security risks for our customers and our system, and it would prohibit our ability to provide customer data in ways that we believe would harm customers and harm stakeholders that are currently getting access to that information. In some ways, the parts of the bill are too vague, and some are too prescriptive. I'll focus on unintended consequences and give you some examples of those, particularly in subdivisions 4 and 6. You've heard a little bit about subdivision 4 and the utilities would be required to provide information to anyone who asks. Smart meters that you've also heard about will provide robust amounts of information and detailed information, and that could very much reveal private details about how customers use energy. It can reveal their use of appliances. It can reveal when they get home from work at the end of the day. It can reveal when they leave for work in the morning. That can pose both privacy and security risks. For example, anyone could get information about as few as 15 homes, according to the bill. With smart meters, that data could reveal a lot about those homes. That same requesting party could come back and ask for an overlapping set of data for an adjacent, maybe, set of 15 homes. By doing overlapping requests, that party could isolate and identify the usage for an individual home. Or in the case of a business customer, it could reveal the usage for a business customer that could be competitively sensitive. So we're concerned about the requirement that would require utilities to disclose to anyone. We also believe that Subdivision 4 poses security risks for our system overall. For example, anyone could request, and the utilities would be required to provide information about connection points on our system. That could be a substation, a feeder, a transformer. That would arm somebody wanting to do harm to the system or disrupt electric service with the information that they would need to target maximum impact. I have additional things that I could talk about. I know there's other folks that want to talk about the bill as well. And so I will leave it at that. And thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Thor Underdahl, then Kelsey Johnson, and please be cognizant of time if you are interested in having the amendments discussed.
I'll be very quick. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I want to first start off and say that we share the proponents' idea around access to data. That's very important to us. That's why we provide access to data for both our customers and authorized third-party consent. That currently is happening. They're standard consent forms. That's something that Subdivision 1 and 2 cover that the IOUs through the PUC process have worked out extensively. When we get into Subdivision 4, I think that's where we get into a bit more complicated discussion. With third-party aggregation without customer consent, you know, the Commission thoroughly vetted this topic, and they decided, based upon the record developed and with the ALJ's suggestions, that the utilities have to review their own specific customer and geographic considerations to be reflective of the fact that we're all very different utilities. Minnesota Power is about as unique as they come, with 70% of our revenues coming from just a small subset of large industrial customers. They asked then that we bring back those aggregation standards to the Public Utilities Commission, and very timely, we just did that yesterday. So for Minnesota Power, we set up an aggregation standard that would provide customer energy usage data at a level no more granular than the aggregate usage of 4 customers on the same rate within the same zip code, where no customer's usage may comprise more than 50% of the aggregate energy. And additionally, the aggregation standard will exclude all energy-intensive trade-exposed customers. A very thoughtful, thorough response to this exact question and how we provide non-consent information. And, you know, with our unique customer base and large service territory, this is what makes the most sense. Our utility modelers ran numerous scenarios to make sure that this would provide for privacy, but also third-party access at the same time. And we're just concerned that a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't look at this sort of issue. And I would further note that it's just not us saying this either. In the docket, both the Minnesota Large Industrial Group and the Office of the Attorney General, and I quote, argued that the Commission need not and should not exercise its general authority over utility practices to promote third-party access to consumer energy utility data. The OAG also opposed any broad policy and authorizing release of customer data without customer consent, even if the data is aggregated and anonymized in some manner. So coming from that party as well, too, we want to continue this discussion. I know California was referenced, and ACEE has a really good report on data access. Even their aggregation is limited to academic researchers, local government departments, and state agencies. So lots of consideration on this topic. I think it just needs more thorough discussion, and we look forward to being a part of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Kelsey Johnson, and then Andrew Moratzka.
Hello, committee members and Madam Chair. My name is Kelsey Johnson. I'm president of the Iron Mining Association. I'm here testifying on behalf of the large power customers that Thor Underdahl just referenced. Since the year 2012, IMA members have participated in the docket before the PUC, thoroughly addressing the general concepts outlined in House File 1683, namely access to customer energy usage data. After much discussion, the Commission declined to approve any specific aggregation standard, leaving it to the utilities to implement, as Mr. Underdahl basically alluded to. Notably, the Commission also declined to adopt the 1515 aggregation standard contained within House File 1683. IMA members are extremely concerned about putting any standard into law that would enable a third party, a potential competitor, to access energy consumption of a particular member. IMA members do not believe the 1515 aggregation standard provides adequate protection against that data being released. This is extremely problematic from the Iron Mining Association's members' perspectives. IMA members have this concern because energy consumption is a significant cost of production, anywhere between 25% and 30%. If the 1515 standard is manipulated in a way that provides a party requesting data to inadvertently or intentionally receive energy consumption information of a specific customer, that information can be combined with other data to better understand production costs, enabling competitors, which includes my members, to find or create a competitive advantage in the global marketplace. We compete not only locally, but we also compete in the global marketplace and cannot and should not be exposed to the financial risks created by this bill. So we respectfully oppose, but we're happy to discuss that further with the authors. Thank you.
Thank you. And now Andrew Moretzka, and then we will hear from Representative Swazinski.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Andrew Moratzka from the law firm of Stoll Reeves here today on behalf of large industrial customers on the systems of Xcel Energy, Minnesota Power, Otter Tail Power, and Minnesota Energy Resources Corporation. I'll keep my comments very brief given the time. The bottom line is that any aggregation the aggregation standard set forth in Subdivision 4, Section 2 of the bill is insufficient to protect large ratepayers from third parties reverse engineering with relative certainty a large industrial ratepayer's energy consumption information. If this information is reverse engineered, and if it is combined with other publicly available information, it could allow sophisticated competitors to accurately calculate net rates of return versus selling price and thereby determine how to marginalize a facility in the marketplace. We raised these concerns in the commission docket that has been referenced a number of times. I was personally involved in those proceedings and drafted comments regarding the 1515 standard, which was proposed during that process. I have those comments if the committee would like to see them. I just want to point out that I was able to come up with a way to reverse engineer the specific consumption information of a hypothetical consumer based on the 1515 standard. And if a lawyer can figure out how to reverse engineer data using the 1515 standard in 15 minutes, I can only imagine what a competitor with more sophisticated tools can and will devise in an attempt to exploit a competitive advantage. As noted, it wasn't just large industrial customers. It was the Attorney General's office that opposed the 1515 aggregation standard. The commission declined to adopt any specific standard, finding, contrary to CUB's testimony today, that the risk was well beyond non-existent to these customers. My large industrial customers respectfully oppose HF 1683. And as I mentioned, I'm happy to distribute the comments to provide greater detail on the example of how to get around the 15-15 rule, if that would be helpful to the committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. Representative Swiecinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, you know, would not nonpartisan staff, I mean, I think just from a strategic standpoint, looking at this bill, talking about data practices in Chapter 13, you know, I know, Madam Chair, you said this is going to be possibly laid over for possible inclusion. You know, just from a practical, I mean, we have a few minutes left, and I think some of the, I'm just looking at the report that was put up to the PUC and some of the folks that were engaged in that conversation. Some of those folks are in favor of this bill, and some of those folks also participated in this commission work at the PUC. But that's the second question. But just from a nonpartisan staff standpoint, do you think we'll potentially run into some trouble here with data not going to the Data Practices Judiciary Committee under Rule 416 because of the Chapter 13 work?
Madam Chair, Representative Swiecinski, I'm afraid my opinion on that is not worth much. I mean, the only actual reference to Chapter 13 is a cross-reference. Obviously, it's going to be up to the chair of that committee as to whether or not they want to hear this bill.
Sure. All right. Thank you, Mr. Eloff, Madam Chair. You know, I would just maybe think that could potentially clear some hurdles for you, potentially moving as this bill potentially moves forward, if it would maybe make that stop. And, you know, I see that Mr. Wolf is here from the PUC. You know, I'm not sure if you'd like to comment on it at all from the report versus some of that aggregation work. But, you know, I think those are really concerns that we should take to heart. And regardless, you know, we saw this just last week when we had the bill that talked about just from the battery storage standpoint where we had consensus built. Kind of a framework in which a lot of people could support on a bipartisan level. And kind of I view, you know, what could have happened last week, instead we put a big amendment and changed the bill, the same as the work that the PUC did with a lot of stakeholders in this particular area. And, you know, how this really kind of throws kind of another monkey wrench into that system in, you know, and how you come together and try to come and build consensus around energy issues, which I would say everyone likes to do. You know, I'm a little concerned. And just hearing some of the testimony out there, I do have a couple amendments that I think could really improve this bill, kind of maybe help ease some of the burdens that some of the folks discussed in their testimony today. And I'd like to offer a couple of them if we got chance, or if you want to, maybe we could come back tonight after we're done with session.
I think we are going to finish up within 7 minutes, so you can offer an amendment, and we will hear from Representative Long, and then we will vote.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment. And this simply is pretty straightforward. I think really kind of gets the bill into gives it a little bit of a calming effect to folks. That would simply get rid of, on page 3, delete subdivision 4. And that's essentially would get rid of a lot of the, if you look on page 3, talking about the preparing and the aggregation, the 15-15 and some of those things. And I think just brings a little common sense to the bill, and I'd ask for your support.
Okay. Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I oppose the amendment. I believe that having access by third parties to anonymized aggregated data is an important part of this bill. Minnesota Power testified that their standard was 4 customers and 50%. This is actually more stringent. It's 15 customers or 15%. So I'm happy to discuss with some of the testifiers what would be an appropriate aggregation level. But I believe that this standard is sufficiently protective of consumer privacy, and so I'd urge a no vote.
Representative Swiecinski has moved A1. We are going to vote on it now. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Yeah.
No.
No. Okay. The noes have it. It does not.
Pat, I think we're going to lose.
Okay. We can have a division. All those in favor, raise your hands.
Chair's hearing is better than mine.
All those opposed. Has it. All right, Representative Swiecinski, do you?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would like to offer the A2 amendment on House File 1683. And that just kind of, you know, allows some of the testimony you heard just from a size-wise and capability standpoint, from aggregation standpoint, and just from a groups of customers that are less than 10,000, that would kind of ease some of the regulatory burden on those smaller utilities so that they could better serve their customers in areas across the state. And I would ask for a positive vote on that.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I oppose the amendment. One of the main purposes of this bill is to provide every single consumer in Minnesota with access to their own data, and this would prevent that from happening.
Representative Baker, a quick comment.
Madam Chair, I've kind of fought hard for the munis and the co-ops and some of the smaller utilities. They don't have the sophistication already sometimes on the smart meters. They don't have them yet. They don't have the staff to really put this information together. I think this amendment is actually a really reasonable one, Representative Long, that if you could accept this one for the smaller folks, let things get rolling further with those smaller utilities, it would make it a lot easier. But at this point, again, any dime a utility gets a request from a customer to get their own information, they do it right now. If this is going to get complicated for the smaller utilities, this is going to be a problem for them. So I just want to urge you to think about what it's like to be a smaller utility like I have out in rural Minnesota. They don't have the capacity. Some of the bigger ones do. So for that reason, I just urge you to consider this as a friendly amendment for the smaller folks. Maybe there's a delay. Maybe there's a more period of a time, but do something for the small folks. They don't have the same capacity.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, thank you for the comment. I understand smaller utilities are certainly in a different position. You mentioned that your utility is providing data access to folks who are requesting it, so this wouldn't be a change for them. If we're talking about third-party access, they're allowed to charge whatever fees are reasonable to hire whatever staff they need to be able to provide that information. So I don't think this should be particularly burdensome, and I do think that it's should be a standard job of utilities to be able to provide their consumers with their own data.
Two more quick, very quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just, you know, I did have a thought. You know, I mean, we do have just a moment or two. If we could, not necessarily comment on the A2 amendment, but to hear from, we could maybe vote on the A2, but I would like just to take a moment or two to hear from the PUC to see kind of what their thoughts are on this. I mean, obviously, this is a policy position that the legislature is going to lead, but I think it might be valuable just to hear from them because they led the charge when it came to this report. And I think we're definitely messing with it in a way. And you know, I know they're a nonpartisan group, and I'm not trying to delay because I know it's going to just get laid over. But I think from a real conversation standpoint, I think it'd be a good one. So,
okay, Representative Bo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I too have concerns about the impact to small utilities, and I know there are methods or things in here that will allow us to allow those utilities to recapture costs, but I do have some concerns about some of those as well, and we can talk later when we have more time. But I do just think as a way to relieve that impact on small utilities, I would encourage a yes vote on A2, just because it gives them some cushion from that impact. Thank you.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wall, I appreciate that. I'm certainly happy to talk about ways to help small utilities we can find a better way to do that, but I do think it's important that small utilities still provide access to their customers when they're requesting data. Okay.
Representative Swazinski has moved Amendment A2. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
No.
Okay. The nays have it. We won't be calling on the PUC. I think we've heard enough of that debate, and if members would like it, we can make sure that the report is in people's packets for our next hearing so they're able to read it on their own. Okay. We didn't do minutes at the beginning. If Representative Stevenson would move the minutes of February 26th.
Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes from February 26th.
All those in favor say aye.
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 In the opposition, the minutes are adopted. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a closing comment on the Representative Long's bill. So I'm a co-sponsor on this bill. I want to thank him for his work on this. I think as it goes forward, I think there's been some legitimate concerns brought forward. Nothing I've heard from Representative Long has said that he's opposed to making those changes to make sure this process goes forward. And just speaking from experience, particularly the 10,000 member area, that's something that we account for in statute already. And the co-ops are going to get their way on that. So you can just either do it now or you can do it later. But without making that change, the bill's not going to become law. So I would just encourage the author to continue to convene stakeholders to address those concerns. But there's some great technology that's coming forward right now that's ahead of us on this. The ability for third parties to go in with the consumer's consent. They plug in things in every single outlet. It reports it back to a central hub. They're able to look back and see where that energy is being used and actually buy a new appliance for a customer, give them that appliance, and then capture part of the energy savings. So people are getting brand new appliances. They're saving money in their electric bill, and it literally pays for itself. I view this bill as an opportunity to leverage that technology and have it be a lot easier to adopt that information to make that happen. I do think there were some really good concerns that were brought up around Section 4 that, candidly, I didn't think about when I signed on to this. And so I hope that the author heeds their wisdom on this going forward. This is the kind of thing that, if it's done right, doesn't need to get caught up in the omnibus trap and can go by itself and do some good things for people. So I hope that's the path that the author and the majority take. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Long. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Long renews his motion that House File 1683 be laid over for possible inclusion. I see no further business, and the meeting is adjourned.